minutes. And so, listen to that and listen to the show coming up. They are really well linked together. So listen to Ecologic here on WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org.
Pink hotel, a boutique, and a swinging hot spot. Don't it always seem to go that you don't know what you've got till it's gone? They paid paradise, put up a parking lot.
If they keep on polluting the earth and telling where we're gonna plant our seed, it makes me wanna cry.
See a windmill go, feel the pull of an ocean wave, the heat from a volcano. There's so much we could do, there's so much we could know, if we listen to the earth.
And every day is Earth Day. I'm Ken Gale.
And I'm Donna Stein.
And this is Ecologic for January 28th, 2020, here on WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org. If your air and water is clean, thank an environmentalist. If not, become one. Enough said. And normally we have a lot of news. I blame technology for not having news today. Not having a computer operating from 6 a.m. until 3 p.m. today. Arr. But I do have a couple items. The first one is for tomorrow. You may remember several shows where we talked about a bill going into the City Council of New York City to ban poisonous pesticides on parks, schoolyards, and playgrounds. And I mentioned I learned at a Veterans for Peace holiday party that they got 34 sponsors for this bill, which automatically triggers a public hearing. That public hearing is tomorrow. There's a press conference at City Hall at 9 a.m. and the hearing starts at 10 a.m. at 250 Broadway, which is right near City Hall, just almost across the street. City Hall is Lower Manhattan. It's 4, 5, and 6 to the Brooklyn Bridge stop. There's a City Hall stop at the R train. Chambers Street on the A, the 2. I mean, there's a lot of trains that go down there. So 9 a.m. at City Hall and right on the steps of City Hall. Yes, the public is invited in. And 10 a.m., again, the public is invited. It's a public hearing. By its very definition, 250 Broadway. And Paula Rogovin has been doing some wonderful work organizing this and getting the sponsors. And you remember that we had some kids who performed a little skit having to do with poisonous pesticides, and we played that skit on here on Ecologic. And one more item to give to you. There's a animal called the scalyfoot snail who grows a shell made of iron to withstand deep sea depths. Yeah, iron. A snail with an iron shell. And it's being threatened with extinction.
Wait, biological iron, wouldn't that be something that they would want to find out how to make?
Yes. In fact, the military is looking into figuring out how do they do that. And but they better figure it out soon. These things may end up extinct because of an increase in mining and oil production and fish farming and desalination plants and shipping and submarine cables and cruise tourism and even offshore wind farms. They're threatening the world's ocean and the sea creatures that live in them. And, well, all of that, besides just literally destroying the bottom of the ocean where things live. And they were investigating one area that was destroyed by some commercial fishing. They were trawling, and they were dragging this stuff along the bottom of the ocean floor and destroyed an entire ecosystem. And 30 years later, that ecosystem had not come back. So it takes a while for an ecosystem on the bottom of the ocean to come back. And so you're getting increased ocean acidification because of this, and marine heating, and coral reef destruction, plastic pollution, all going on. Now, Article 76 of the UN Convention on the Law of the Sea allows countries to claim seabed that lies beyond the 200 miles of a nation's exclusive economic zone. These claims account for more than 37 million square kilometers of seabed, an area more than twice the size of Russia, the world's biggest country. Greater accountability must be imposed on banks and governments. There's an article in a recent UK Guardian about this, and I'll put the link on the EcoLinks page. And that's all the news that I have. Ecoradio.org is our website. WBAI Ecologic is our Facebook page, so please click like. And from ecoradio.org, you can go to past guests and our permanent archives. And there's a lot of information. The EcoLinks page alone is got enough information to keep you busy for weeks. Because all the news and announcements that we've been doing for the last several years are all linked from there. I know there are students and parents and teachers that use and that use those links. So good job. And today was a hearing. Oh, Donna has something.
Okay. There is some interesting things that are upcoming events for that Clearwater is wanting people to know about. On January 30th, that's Thursday. There is a Indian Point Closure Task Force meeting in Cortland. We'll have a link for it on our page. And on February 4th, the Stewart National Guard Base Restoration Advisory Committee is at 6 p.m. So these are important things for people who want to know more about stopping Indian Point and nuclear energy. It was a very exciting city council meeting today. It was so exciting. Don't take it from me. The mm-hmm. people from the city council members that were leading it said that it was one of the best they've ever had. We had 60 people giving testimony, and they already had a majority, a veto-proof majority of council members going in, but we got one more by our testimony. And interestingly enough, the only dissenting speaker today was somebody from de Blasio's office.
Oh.
It's like, what? There was an Office of International Affairs, and they agreed with the spirit. It was about Resolution 976, which is about the divestment of nuclear power, nuclear weapons, I mean, from the pensions. You work your whole life. You're really happy to have a pension from the city.
Mm.
And they're good. They're generous pensions. But then how awful do you feel when those pensions are making their money from something that's going to hurt your children and your grandchildren's future? Yeah. Only a small percentage of the city's pension funds are from nuclear weapons. But just like there's 14,000 nuclear weapons in the world, but only one going off is a problem. Is a problem. Same thing here. Just a small percentage.
True thing. Yeah, right.
Of your money that's spent, of your own money that you worked your whole life for, goes into nuclear. That's not a good thing. And there was people from so many different walks of life. I was asked to speak for Clearwater, and boy, Clearwater was in the house, and I'm really pleased to say that I added some additional information that was a little different than everybody else, because we're talking about, and I'm going to read my testimony to you.
Yeah, please do.
After that, we have a treat for you, and I'll tell you who's going to be on the air in a few minutes. All right. So, my name is Donna Stein. I'm a member of the Board of Directors of Hudson Rivers Loop Clearwater and president of New York City Friends of Clearwater, both founded by Pete Seeger 50 years ago in response to the need to clean up the environmental disaster that was the Hudson River. There was much success, yet to this day the river still needs our attention. Clearwater has long opposed and exposed the risks of nuclear power. Focus has been on the dangers of nuclear plants and the use of nuclear energy, but make no mistake, there is a direct connection between nuclear weapons and nuclear energy and its resultant nuclear waste. Nuclear is not just about the plant, the bomb. There are so many things up to that point. Uranium mining, milling, and weapons testing impacts communities around this country and the world, including First Nation communities in New Mexico, Texas, and Nevada, with proposed waste storage on their lands. Each nuclear facility is potentially a nuclear weapon. Attempts at reprocessing have failed, leaving highly radioactive, contaminated sites. One example is the West Valley Demonstration Project south of Buffalo, New York. Despite over 30 years of cleanup efforts and billions of dollars having been spent at the site, the West Valley Demonstration Project property has been described as arguably Western New York's most toxic location.
I would agree with that.
Pete Seeger, back in 1963, sang a song, Never Again the A-Bomb. Look it up. We'll have the link on our page. He said, "We must forbid it. Take care that the third atom bomb never falls." Sadly, testing continued even past the times we were told it had stopped, and nuclear weapons arsenals in several countries remain deeply troubling. There is a serious flaw in the Nuclear Nonproliferation Treaty of a so-called inalienable right of sovereign states to use nuclear energy for peaceful purposes. You can't have a nuclear bomb without a nuclear reactor to create its fuel. History demonstrates that nuclear plants were for the main purpose to create material for nuclear bombs. There are much better, safer ways to boil water.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, it is a fact that nuclear power is now being replaced by renewables with storage instead of the burning of fossil fuels, which exacerbates climate change. Clearwater hasn't actively worked on issues related to nuclear weapons. However, it is actively working in opposition to the use of nuclear energy and the related problems of nuclear waste, reactor closure, as well as promoting safe reactor decommissioning. Bob Alpern, a longtime anti-nuclear activist and fellow member of the Clearwater Board of Directors, often calls Indian Point Nuclear Power Plant a pre-positioned nuclear weapon. Think about it. So many things could go wrong. It sits too close to a high-pressure gas pipeline managed by a company who has had their share of pipeline accidents. It also sits on a seismic fault line, which was unknown to the builders when it was originally sited. It was a small earthquake upstate just recently. Terrorists have included Indian Point as a possible target. Past commitments to nuclear disarmament and nonproliferation have not been heeded. It's time to reaffirm them and take concrete steps to abolish nuclear weapons, at the same time focus on the safest possible storage of the tons of radioactive waste all over this nation and the world. Next, I told them, please put a halt to this madness. Don't make public employees have to be a party to this horror. I urge the city council to divest from nuclear weapons, to reaffirm New York City as a nuclear weapons-free zone, and to support the treaty on the prohibition of nuclear weapons. Make history, attend to your legacy, and pass this resolution. It's a start. And the great news is everything it looks like everything's going to definitely pass today. They have enough votes. So this is monumental for New York City. It's the heart of something they have been working on for decades.
And it's precedent setting.
It's, yeah. And New York counts. You know, some people would say, what's the big deal? It's a city. It's not, because every little bit that you can do to stop the proliferation of nuclear weapons is going to be strong, going to be powerful, going to be needed. And New York City is big.
And it inspires other cities.
Yeah.
And it makes it that much easier for other cities to do the same thing.
Yeah. Sierra Club is coming up with a talk on why nuclear power is not the answer to climate crisis. Alfred Meyer, Michelle Lee from IPSC, Alfred Meyer from Physicians for Social Responsibility, and Mary Inouye from the Manhattan Project for a Nuclear Free World are all going to be speaking at that. We'll have that on the website as well.
What date is that?
And they that's going to be May 13th. It's a ways away, but boy, time flies. And Alfred was there today. There was, like I said, 60 activists from all different areas of interest today speaking. So, and another, we had somebody whose testimony was read today. And as I was speaking to people and networking a little bit today, I met a wonderful Lenape man named Owl. And he said, well, I could speak on the air tonight, but I think you really want to have Chief Perry. He said, okay, that sounds good to me. And so Owl read Chief's testimony, but I think we can let him read it himself. Chief Perry?
Hi there.
Welcome to Ecologic.
Well, thank you, guys, and thank you, Ken and Donna, and also Ecologic for all the work you continue to do, undaunted by all of the foolishness around it, reality.
Thank you for your thank you.
Well, what a wonderful way to put it. So do you want to read your testimony to everybody, or do you want to summarize it?
Yeah, let me read it, and then we can take it from there. It says, I am a Shishem Magwa, Chief Perry of the Ramapo Lenape Nation, the Munsee people whose ancestral land this great city now sits on. It's important to acknowledge that this is Munsee territory, as there's other groups claiming to be wherever they've not belonged. So that's another form of genocide, but as it may be, it says, I come not to belabor you with more facts, of which you should already know, but to share in ancient truths for which most have ignored since 1624. That's when New York was established.
Mm-hmm.
In the 1400s, the Ojibwa began their migration west because it was foretold Shawnee people were coming and some would bring death. This happened. In the 1800s, the Western nations prophesied the coming of the black snakes, which would bring joy to many, and in the end, death. That too has happened. You cannot drink oil. If one oil train derails or spills into the New York State watershed, and it nearly did in 2018, hundreds of thousands of people in this city will die. You cannot drink oil. It is a current danger, and it is a danger now. If you pollute the water to the city, perhaps even millions will perish within a week or two. In the 90s, sitting in the Himalayas with elders from over 200 different countries, it was foretold that hollow people were coming and some would hold the sons of death. The sons of death would be would be nuclear weapons. That has happened. As the Western world's freedom wilts under the knowing guise of misdirecting syntax, the hollow people have risen. They now carry their sons of death worn openly as badges of bravado. It too has happened and is happening now. So I implore each and every one of you to arise, to stand for humanity, and to support the legislation to divest from nuclear profiteering and proliferation. I'm asking New York to join Paris, Berlin, Sydney, Los Angeles, and Washington, D.C. to become a part of the Icon Cities campaign in support of the nuclear ban treaty. For now is the time, and you cannot drink death.
So, wow.
That was my short statement.
Bravo. And,
is it online anywhere?
I believe Al may have put it online.
We have a copy. We can put it on the on our website.
Okay, yeah, look for it.
Yeah, that'd be nice. I think it's interesting because traditional knowledge globally has always been sort of shortchanged and put to the side, but yet these prophecies have all come to pass. So we're not talking Harry Potter here. We're talking something that you can calculate as well. You can do math. Yet we're sort of ignoring reality, but I think the problem is there's a different in the onus of each society. One's about sort of profiting, and the other one is about the humanity of, and brotherhood and community.
So what happened?
As to what?
Well, I mean, what do you think happened? I mean, all people started out as people,
right.
And the values changed. What do you think changed values so that there's so much in opposition to your traditional values?
I think one of the things that changed even globally is the fact that a small group started to leverage power, basically saying if you're either on my side or on no side, and you take over. And I would even suggest, for instance, one of the greatest sicknesses that's ever happened in the world has been the enslavement of millions of Africans in the American continent. But prior to that, that very same small group had also enslaved millions of Europeans, and people seem to have adopted a Stockholm syndrome to go along with it rather than stand against sort of inhumanity. So you're saying what has happened? I think internal terror has allowed people to identify more with what could initially be instantly painful than with the fact that they than the comfort of being in a community.
Do you think it's changing? Certainly, the youth of the world are rising.
I believe absolutely that. The counterbalance to what is happening right now is the youth of the world. I believe it is the generation. I'm in my 70s. I believe it's in the generation maybe in their 40s and 50s that understand it's about community, it's about self-worth. We forgot the fact that self-worth is an inherent part of spirituality in the soul. It's not how much you have in your pocket. And I think therein is where we have separated. I think Eisenhower said it. I've tried to say it nicely now. The military-industrial complex. Do we all need a military at this point? Yes. Do we need to make our entire budget dependent upon the military? No. Is there need for more nuclear weapons? No.
No.
And something that was said in New York. Okay, we have Indian Point, but you know what? When you have nuclear weapons and you support nuclear weapons, that makes you a priority target.
Sure.
So in addition to all the other reasons why someone may want to hurt us, there's another very real strategic reason. But essentially, I think, and it will be the younger people, and I hope it comes about very, very soon, that these hollow individuals, these people have no claim to humanity beyond their own avarice, also have great physical powers. They control the nuclear weapons. And this is an interesting time in history. Not only do they the weapons, but there's sort of this, we're calling it a right-leaning thing globally, but in my statement I had said that it was a misdirecting, it was a knowing guise of misdirecting syntax. And what I meant by that is these certain elements have made the word leftist like it's something it's not. They've created what leftist is. That's not historically what leftist is. All of these people concerning about that need to think about their grandfathers in the Great Society, how they got their houses, how they got to school, how they got to hospitalization, how they got to unions, who built the roads. They weren't leftists. They were good, solid American citizens. Leftist is a prefabrication of ugly people, hollow people that are looking to maintain some form of control.
It's when they want to control the narrative, they give it labels.
Exactly.
You're an ist. You're something ist. Something else ist. You're exactly. You know, a leftist. You know, that's how they control how people think.
And you know, about 30 or so years ago, a certain group in our government come out and they were talking about dumbing down society. And at the time, I thought that's really ludicrous. You cannot stop education. But now I realize, now how with the new society where there is no actual knowledge of need for civil rights, there is no actual knowledge of what the left or the right is in terms of politics. These people have been smart enough to foresee that and then label it, and we're sort of buying into it. I think this is a good time to do what a lot of teachers tell us to do, apply critical thinking.
And you're listening to Ecologic on WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org. And our guest today is Chief Dwayne Perry of the Ramapo Lenape Nation, the Munsee people, the first inhabitants of this city.
And the other star of the show was the city council meeting that was on that happened today, Ian Sabarte from the Western Bands of the Shoshone Nation of Indians was one of the speakers today. Very dynamic. He's I believe he's an attorney. He was on his way to Washington D.C. tomorrow to speak about not storing nuclear waste on Native lands, and that's even something I touched on in my talk. They're in control of Yucca Mountain. They said we're not storing. Well, first of all, everything I've heard is that Yucca Mountain's full, but they're not storing any more nuclear waste on Yucca Mountain. And he's, I think he's a powerful speaker. I think, do you know him, Chief?
I don't know him directly, but I would like to just say one thing about the nuclear storage in Arizona. We know that at least 25% of the Diné women who have been due through a federal study on uranium have become sterilized or affected, 25%. And just to give you an idea here, as New Yorker speaking, Phelps Dodge, who had brought death to the Diné reservations for years back in the 40s, where people were working and perishing from exposure to uranium and et cetera. Well, I don't know if Mr. Dodge understood the impact of it, but that gentleman lived in New York. These people were so far removed from the reality of what they have done that I don't think it had any impact on them other than their profit line, their bottom line.
And FYI, to anyone who's listening who doesn't know, the Dene people are what was known as the Navajo, but
yes.
They prefer their actual name, Dene. Right.
And the government hired the Dene people to mine uranium before anybody, they didn't know what it was.
Exactly.
As there were prophecies against taking it out of the ground. So they knew, you know, thousands of years ago, leave it in the ground. Leona Morgan comes out here every once in a while to speak. And she has a button, and it's in the same style of the atomic power, no thank you, but it's the Dene word for uranium, because there is a word for it, because they were warned against it.
I think there's, I don't know, I do think the younger people, the newer generations are melding it once again back into one nation, back into one people, one community. But there is a giant disconnect from, I guess, manifest destiny and prophets over humanity that we have failed to even listen to our elders, our ancestral elders. And I think even in a way to show you how manipulation of, you might even say intellectual theft of property happens, a vast majority of the known medicines are coming out of the Amazon. Those people went down there and sat with those medicine people and found out what they were using, what the inherent core of that was. They took that drug and brought it here, and instead of giving the people in the Amazon even 1% of the profit, they made them nitwits with bones in their nose.
Or even worse, there was a young woman about 20 years ago I heard that I read about that spent a lot of time in the Amazon, carefully documented each plant, what it's used for, all of that information. You brought it up very excited to help the world, and guess what? It got lost.
Yeah.
I talked to some Native people from the Northwest Coast, and they mentioned that because of climate chaos, a lot of their medicinal plants were dying off or moving to a place where they were growing in a place where the people there didn't know those plants, because they grew up with different plants that were also moving. But Native people are legally tied to certain plots of land, and the knowledge of the plants that used to grow there is leaving. And so they thought, well, we would better let the world know about some of these important plants before they're gone completely. And so they talked about a berry that grew in a certain spot near the Pacific Ocean that was incredible for a lot of different problems, and really great for the immune system. And so they told a scientist who published it in a journal, and because it was published in a journal, it was now in the commons. And a pharmaceutical company went, and they took every single last berry of that plant.
Oh, no.
And that plant is no longer available to use for anyone. And so the people said, you know, we have other plants that are good medicine, and we can't tell anybody about them because this is what they do when they know.
Not quite with medicine, but that's exactly what the Ramapo Muncie have been forced to do here in metropolitan New York with our sacred sites. We know because of the value of the land and because of us being here for millennia that the moment we expose a portal or a sacred site to, say, the larger population, somebody either buys it, bulldozes it, or kicks us off.
Yeah.
So what we've done is sort of what they've done in the Amazon and around the world is leave it overgrown and don't say anything. Because the minute you try to share that goodness, it becomes not no longer attainable in terms of use. And I think that's standard globally.
It's really a shame, but I certainly understand it. It's terrible what they'll do. Whether they're trying to stop things that cure people, because then they can't. They sell medicine to treat symptoms and not to actually cure people, and they can't treat symptoms if people are cured.
Exactly. It's almost like we're part of their monopoly. We've sort of taken this MGO food stuff, and then when we get sick, we go to their hospital, and then they hit us with the final buck.
Right.
It's a vicious circle, and yes, it can be broken. There's a lot of positive models throughout Europe. I think one of the most ludicrous things was, for a while, it was cheaper to buy our own American-produced medicine from Canada than to get it right here in the States.
Right.
Now, how ludicrous is that? For a dollar, of course.
Now, I've been active, on and off, with Native American issues, since my early 20s. And back then, there was no Lenape Center in New York City, and now there is one.
I think for the most part, I hate to be disparaging, but these are pretenders.
Oh, yeah.
They're UNAMIs. I don't know if you know the history.
No,
this
I don't.
Munch territory. UNAMIs are essentially the people in South Jersey that they gave up their homeland, they gave up their spiritual path. Took them about 80 years to get out west. At that point, when everybody likes to talk about the Dawes Rolls, half the people on the Dawes Rolls were settlers, and now they're back claiming territory that's not theirs. But just let me leave you with a small story, because I don't want to waste time encouraging others. But a few years ago in Poughkeepsie, we uncovered some remains, and rightfully so, the state called the people out there, and they called some other people, I think, in Ohio and us. We have the largest Muncie burial ground of antiquity right here in Morville, New Jersey, about 35 miles outside of Manhattan. So we're saying this is really wonderful. We're hoping that everybody has a really good piece we can put into this ceremony and really bring some love and understanding back to the earth. In the course of that, not only did we find out these people had no knowledge of the East Coast whatsoever that they're claiming, but I got a call, and this is true, and I will divulge it in private if need be. And they said, these people are trying to repatriate the remains so they can have a justification for a casino in the New York area.
Oof.
That's who they are. They're on the march, and it's unfortunate. So my hand is open to them, but at the same time, I don't know how you describe that. That almost begs a street response from a New Yorker.
I probably shouldn't have laughed that much, but I didn't expect that.
Within every organization, just to be fair, within every organization there might be the opportunists, but there also might be people who really want to be there for idealistic reasons. So
yeah, I totally agree. And one of the things we're in the process of doing is we're trying to find out, we're in the process of finding out, is this sort of a tribal sanctioning? If it is, that's a different animal. But if it's not, it seems to me it's just a handful of opportunists and know what to say to the right people. You got good hearted people who want to help. We have historians and a number of other people, I think, that we can sit down and show these folks have no grounds whatsoever in New York at all.
Well, let me change the subject back to you, because I've seen the Ramapo Lenape website. And I think it's just wonderful. I mean, you've got a lot of information, I highly recommend everyone check out your website. You want to give people the URL for it?
We'll put the link on the page too.
Yeah, okay. I believe it's ramapolenape.org, but it's one word. But
And Ramapo is spelled Rampough.
Yes, exactly. And the interesting
not R A M A P O.
No, R A M P-O-U-G-H. I haven't seen the website in so long.
Well, it's a good website.
Yeah, you should go visit sometime.
I know they have a really great historical section where you can really draw down actual timelines and areas. Pretty precise historical.
Oh, yeah. Your historical section goes back hundreds of years. It's really fascinating.
I mean, I just recently called, some of these people are doing things with the museum in Pennsylvania. And I called a friend of mine, a chief from the Delaware, to congratulate him on making sort of this move. He said it wasn't them.
Huh?
I'm laughing, but it's really kind of a trap. It's like having the Stockholm syndrome, and now you're trying to prove that you are the enemy. You know, this is just another form of genocide when you're claiming territory that's not yours.
I remember a Native-made movie that I saw years ago. I wish I could remember the name of it. It was about a grandfather and grandson going to a powwow from South Dakota to New Mexico, and they were on their way, and this white kid comes in and wants to, you're going to the powwow, and the grandson is like, oh, he's a wannabe, and puts him down, and the grandfather goes, he wants to be connected. There's nothing wrong with wanting to be connected.
Exactly.
And movies, usually those movies don't give both points of view like that. It was really neat to see.
You know what we do, and I'd like to share this with your listeners. When we do larger tobacco ceremonies, we implore the general public to join us. And what we do is we ask people to, very often we may open up the ceremony with a shofar, may have somebody doing a call to prayer. And the whole thing is that we implore people not to be the best that they can be. We don't need people to be an Indian for an hour. We need you to be the best Jew, the best Muslim, the best Hindu, because we don't know what sacred sounds that you may let up into this ceremony that will make all these prayers work. We need you as a human being. So in a very real way, Native American spirituality is as tight as we've held on to it to preserve it. It belongs to all of us on the earth. And now we finally get a chance to share it, but it's scarily. I'm waiting to hear what the opposition, the Hollow people, got to tell us about praying. We just got done with a large lawsuit against, I call it the Ghetto Association in Morwell, New Jersey.
Wow.
Didn't want us to pray on our own land.
Oh.
What was their justification?
They got money and we don't.
I mean, just
it was really amusing. Initially, for instance, a good example. I'm not violating any trust here, but they call themselves the Polo Club. Well, you know what? They don't have a dead horse between them. That's arrogance. And you know...
What does that mean, they don't have a dead horse between
them? No, they're a polo club. They don't have a horse.
Oh, a horse. Oh, okay. Well, it would be hard to play polo with a dead horse.
I don't have
horse.
A dog. Well, I mean, I said I don't want to be too terribly disparaging, but these people have been extremely ugly. At one point, they literally was coming in our face with, well, you know, we're spending all this money and we don't want you people here.
Ooh.
And then we got blessed to have a Weill law firm and the Center for Constitutional Rights and a number of other private practitioners give us a hand. And now the cry is, well, we got to spend our money and your lawyers are for free. Now, look, you're spending on hate. You can't have it both ways. But very vindictive group up there.
Well, we have 10 minutes left of EcoLogic, and we're here every Tuesday from 8 to 9, and next month is the membership drive, so I'm not sure which weeks we'll be on and which ones we won't be. But at any rate, I'm Ken Gale.
And I'm Donna Stein.
And we're with Chief Perry of the Ramapo Lenape in Mahwah, New Jersey. And do you want to take some listener phone calls, Chief?
Sure, I'd try to. Absolutely.
Okay. So the number to call is 212-209-2877. 212-209-2877. If you have any questions for Chief Perry.
Or
if you were at the hearing today. I'd love to hear from you if you were at the hearing today.
If anybody's listening that's at Kathleen Sullivan's house right now, there was a number of people who spoke today who went to Kathleen Sullivan and who's one of the organizers along with Robert Kuhnquist.
And somebody must have WBAI and speed dial because they called 212-209-2877 very quickly. You're on the air.
I just love your show, and I just love hearing Chief Wayne Perry speaking, and he sounds like a man of great discernment. And so I wanted to ask him, I have some literature here from Bernie Sanders, who says that he wants to empower the tribal nations on his campaign literature. But I wondered if Chief Wayne Perry had been looking at the candidates and what he thought.
Ooh.
Well, that's a pretty tricky question.
Well,
we're looking for an endorsement here?
I love Bernie Sanders, and it's a shame about what is happening to him because he is an independent. He's not even a Democrat. He's an independent. And he wants to do some wonderful things for people, and he seems
Let's let Chief Perry.
Yes, let me hear him.
Well,
thank you.
I have absolutely no issue whatsoever with Bernie, but I'm going to cop out with this one just in case. Part of what was also said in this gathering of elders was that people had to get back to the old way, and they said it a number of times. I'm going the old way. Is that like before subways? And, you know, these are people who live on the earth. And what they meant was we all need to learn to build community, to understand each other, to grow, and to get back to the original. Most societies were matronal up until the sort of this modern gung-ho time.
Yes.
And what that meant was that the women sat in the houses of deliberation, not necessarily carrying out the deliberation. So my thought is this. If Bernie's there, I'm 100% for him. If a lady gets the nomination, then I'm 100% for her in that it looks like a fulfillment of the prophecy.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you for your call.
Thank you.
Thanks for putting us on speed dial.
212-209-2877 and call. We have just a few minutes left, but enough time to take a few of your calls.
And let me ask you, Chief Perry, were you aware of what was happening with the Touro Wampum revival?
I remember when Hickory and them first came down.
Yay, you know Hickory.
And I've done some stuff also with you guys at Clearwater and over at the Indian Point.
All right.
And
yeah.
We had people in that canoe, you know, that thing. We met them and relatives.
Yeah, I was one of the paddlers. I was one of the guides actually. I think I had the fastest boat, and I did the last 8 days of the Touro Wampum of the 13-day. Travels down from Albany down to New York City.
You better explain what Touro Wampum is now.
There's only two of us.
Yeah. Well, the Touro Wampum was a celebration of the treaty between the Onondaga Nation and the Dutch settlers. The treaty that was made, the Touro Wampum, was a treaty that promised that they would travel side by side in the river that flows both ways and in total peace. It was the ideal way of of the white man and the indigenous people getting along and working together. It didn't quite live up to what was wanted, but
I was going to say, but it was a wonderful coming together, and it's still alive. It's, as you know, it's still working.
Yeah. We had, at one point, we had 250 boats traveling side by side.
I'd like to share something a little closer to home.
Mm-hmm.
Currently, we were talking earlier about sort of hiding sacred sites, letting them become overgrown.
Yeah.
What most people don't know is that the Ramapo Munsee, my people, the Lenapes, were once a member of the Iroquois Confederacy.
Right.
We withdrew from the Confederacy to support the rebels. The rebels at the time was George Washington and them. That decision was made at this sacred site we're talking about. It used to be called Constitutional Hill. Then they changed it to the Hovenkopf.
Where is that?
Well, this is right here on the New Jersey-New York border. And currently, we're working diligently. We could ask all your listeners and supporters to give us a hand. We would like to retain control over the mountain in its natural state and reactivate the portal. Right now, of all things, that mountain is owned by the Rockland County Sewer District.
What steps can we take?
Well, I think we can contact the Rockland County Sewer District and the Rockland County Legislature and just simply tell them, or state officials, tell them that you are in support. But maybe most importantly, if we can sneak in a little commercial sometime with you and Ken and say, we're having a meeting, please join us.
Oh, yeah.
We're having a ceremony, please come up to the mountain and pray with us.
We'll be glad to announce it when you have the details.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, super. Thank you.
And we have another listener phone call, 212-209-2877, and you're on the air. You're on the air.
Hi, thank you. I have, a comment/question observation.
Go for it.
What always concerns me is it seems like we're so much more harder on our own people. This idea, I understand that white people want to connect, but where is the consideration for Native people? And that maybe they don't want to be around white people at certain events. They'd like to connect to their own people, especially with the near almost extermination. And in some places like South America, there has been extermination of Native tribes.
I don't know about that, because
and
I've always felt that, welcomed.
Can you just let me finish, please? For example, and I hope it doesn't sound too strong of a comparison, but you never hear about Jewish people wanting to connect or have dinner with Nazis or the great-grandchildren of Nazis, who are obviously not Nazis anymore. But you never hear them being so concerned with having a meal with or doing anything with people that were responsible, not directly.
We are running out of time, and we'll give the last minute to Chief Perry.
Yeah, I don't think it's so much that it's just a reality that everyone at core, we would like to believe, are human beings. And also, there's another thing. There's a very real political edge to it. Every group has 3 to 5% that you can rely on to be their sort of activist. For instance, we got about 3,500 to 5,000 people. That leaves you 10 people to take care of business. If you don't have the capacity to form allies and friends and walk forward hand in hand, you pretty well are not going to walk anywhere. And just as another commercial, this is New York. This ain't out there, I'm sure most people listening could probably buy their own reservation for the people on their block. They're not going to buy it here in metropolitan New York. Well, no disrespect to the folks in the West. But.
Yeah, I think part of her comment was also the it's different in South America than it is here, I think.
Oh, yeah. Well, absolutely. There's still 400 uncontacted tribes in South America that this guy is sort of labeled as terrorists because they've never seen somebody right. outside the tribe, let alone a bulldozer. So they come out there in their own way and do whatever they do to protect their village, and these other guys got machine guns.
And so thank you very much, Chief Dwayne Perry of the Arapaho Lenape, for being on Ecologic today.
And to that point you just made, I really admire the courage of those people who, without weapons, are facing those guns.
Oh, absolutely.
There's some amazing courage.
And so I think we should go out with some PC or talking about the best way of having energy in this country. And stay tuned for
300 years.
Thanks, everybody.
Sir Thomas More invented the word utopia, where everything was going to be hunky-dory. But now we know it's going to be a green-powered Earth, and that'll be solartopia.
Was there an Adam? Was there an Eve? Or did we evolve from what we conceived? Either way, we got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.
So we went digging into the ground and started to burn many things we found. But
don't you know we're gonna have a solartopia, solartopia, solartopia. Don't you know we're gonna have a solartopia all over God's green world.
Well, we multiplied, we needed more. The rich got rich, the poor got sore. The fuel ran scarce, the price jumped high, and so they gave nuclear power a try. But
don't you know we're gonna have a solartopia, solartopia, solartopia. Don't you know we're gonna have a solartopia all over God's green world.
But the nuclear plants were built in haste, with too many risks and no place for waste. And so from Seabrook to Shoreham Town, we have to shut those new plants down. But
don't you know we're gonna have a solartopia, solartopia, solartopia. Don't you know we're gonna have a solartopia all over God's green world.
Now we're fighting wars over oil and gas. No matter who wins, it will not last. The earth is scarred, the planet is warming. Don't you think that all of it's a great big warning?
Don't you know we're gonna have a solartopia, solartopia, solartopia. Don't you know we're gonna have a solartopia all over God's green world.
this is the wonderful positive way of approaching the problem. Don't just say don't. Let's say do something good. And this is the most exciting time in the world to be living. There's never been such an exciting time. Win.